This podcast is brought to you by Aviation Consumer Magazine, the consumer resource of pilots and aircraft owners.
Hi, this is Mary Grady for AvWeb, and today I'm talking with John McNaid. His title is he's the National RUS Advisor for the Recreational Aviation Foundation, and he's going to explain to us exactly what that means and what he does. And the Recreational Aviation Foundation has done a lot of work around the country to help provide access to remote airstrips for pilots, and also to even help develop new airstrips, and also this initiative that John is involved in, which is also hopefully going to open up a whole lot more places. So he'll tell us more about that. So John, thanks for talking to us today.
Sure. Good afternoon. Well, an RUS is short for a Recreational Use Statute, and what that is a it's a law that is that every state has. They were developed back in the 1960s and 70s, and the concept was to be able to keep privately owned land open for public recreational use. And the way it worked was that the big concern even back then was liability of the landowner if somebody was using his property. And what this statute does is it limits the liability on the landowner. It essentially treats anyone using the land as if they were a trespasser, so that if they get hurt and try to sue the property owner, they have a very slim chance of winning the suit. This has worked well throughout the country to keep land open for things like hunting and hiking and fishing and so forth, four-wheel driving. One of the things that hasn't been listed in this statute is aviation. And the Recreational Aviation Foundation has been on a mission over the past 7 or 8 years to include in each of the state recreational use statutes the term aviation activities or something similar. And the reason for this is so that private airstrip owners feel that they have the same protections when people use their airstrip for landing an airplane as a hunter he would have from protecting himself from a hunting accident on the very same property. And what we found was that a lot of airstrip owners, private airstrip owners, were reluctant to allow people to use their airstrips, even though they might like to do so, simply because they're worried about that liability issue. You know, what adding aviation activities to the recreational use statute does is it clarifies in everybody's mind, especially in the mind of the airstrip owner, that indeed he has the same protection when somebody uses his airstrip for recreational aviation as he does when somebody's going across on a snowmobile or an ATV and so forth.
Okay, well, that seems like a pretty daunting effort to go state by state all around the country and do this, but you guys have been having a lot of success with it, right?
Well, when I got on board, we got Maine to include aviation in 2009. I worked for 2 years on it. And John McKenna, the president of the RAF, thought it would be a good idea if I came on board and help guide people in other states. And we're an all-volunteer organization. We do have one person who works for us in the office to kind of hold the glue together. But other than that, this is all done by people in the individual states who have a passion for aviation. And we can guide them from where I sit here in Massachusetts, but I can't go out and do the deed for them in South Carolina. That's up to the people there to deal with their legislators. But we explain the process and how to go about doing this. And when we passed Maine in 2009, it was the fifth state in the country to have aviation in its recreational use statute. And the big exciting news recently was we got California passed just this month, and that became number 24. So we're almost halfway to all 50 states, which is our goal.
Well, in California, I guess that's a big aviation state. There's probably a lot of airstrips there.
Well, what's interesting when I started working in this was to learn just how many private airstrips there are. In most states, there are usually more private airstrips, sometimes many more private airstrips than public use airports. And that's not counting heliports or seaplane bases. That's just regular landing runways. And so when you get an RUS to include aviation, potentially you're in any state, you're doubling the number of places to land an airplane, so long as the owner of that airstrip allows people to land there. Now, passing the RUS doesn't make these private use airstrips public use by any means. You still need to, as a pilot, you still need to request permission and so forth. But what it does do, and we've learned this from owners of airstrips, myself included, because I own one, is that owners sleep a whole lot better at night, and they're much more willing to say yes to somebody who requests coming into their airport to camp or to visit a friend or even just get an ice cream cone down the street or something.
Okay, so if people want to find out more about your work or find out how to access some of these sites or how to help support what you're doing, how would they find out more?
Well, it's pretty easy. We have a pretty good website, and you can find that at www.theraf, all one word, theraf.org. And you can find out pretty much anything you need to know. You can make a donation if you think you would like to support us and like what you're seeing and what we do. We'd appreciate having you as a volunteer. There's a lot of different ways that you can help out, either locally or nationally. And certainly, we can always use some funding for those long trips across the country from Montana to.
Yeah.
Washington, D.C.
Okay, well, thanks very much, and I appreciate your time today.
Thank you very much. Nice talking to you.
This podcast has been brought to you by Aviation Consumer Magazine. For more information on Aviation Consumer, log on to www.aviationconsumer.com.